We're doing Megillah. We're up to Dav Zayin Amud Beis. Ein ben Yom Tov l'Shabbes, Eloch Nefesh Bilvad. The Mishnah is going in line with other Mishnayot. It seems to tell us a rule, which we said is more limited than the Mishnah is understood at first glance. The Mishnah says there's no difference between Yom Tov and Shabbos other than the capacity to prepare food, which is permitted on Yom Tov and prohibited on Shabbos. That's called Ochel Nefesh based on the Pasuk that says what does the Pasuk say? So that capacity to make food is called Ochel Nefesh. So we saw in the other Mishnayot that whenever these Mishnayot use these rules, it's not as generalized as the Mishnah is understood literally. It's more limited within a certain set. Within a certain area, there's no difference between Yom Tov and Shabbos other than this point. So that's why the Gemara right away tries to figure out, what's this coming to the exclusion of? You're saying there's no difference other than this. So I think it's to the exclusion of everything else. No, says the Gemara. Ha, but, le'inyan machshirei ochel nefesh zeh vezeh shavin. When it comes to the things that prepare the ochel nefesh, they are equal, meaning I can only prepare the food, but machshirei ochel nefesh, the preparatory items, if I need a pot, I can't make a pot to cook my food on Yom Tov. There, Shabbos and Yom Tov are equal. What does that word mean?
They are equal, meaning the same laws.
Oh, so does shavin mean what we might call balabatish in a simple understanding that, okay, you're prohibited to doing ochel nefesh on both of them? That's one possible understanding. Or when we say zeh vezeh shavin, they are both equal, do we mean to say it is the same prohibition? Meaning I could say, Shabbos has its prohibition, Yom Tov has its prohibitions, they're not equal. But you know, the fact that you are prohibited is equal to both. When I say equal, I mean they are the same. They have the same source of prohibition. Or I mean equal, they have the same laws, but they each one with its own source. Right? And there's going to be a halachic difference. Yeah, you guys got the difference?
They're not just the same law. They're different laws from different sources, but they happen to be teaching the same.
Right. Which same one result. Is it? Is it the same result, or is it also the same source? Yeah? Is it the same result? They're both prohibited when it comes to Ochel, Machshirei Ochel Nefesh? Or is it also the same source? The same source of prohibition? So far, so good? Yeah? Okay. Just a question we should notice as we read it. Matnitin delok Rabbi Yehuda. Our Mishnah is not like the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda. Notice, there are different ways in which the Gemara words this concept. When the Gemara tries to tell us our Mishnah is arguing on an opinion, sometimes the Gemara will word it as upliga de, and our Mishnah is an argument with. Sometimes the Mishnah says matnitin delo, our Mishnah is not like. When the Gemara says matnitin delo, it seems to indicate I'm going with our Mishnah. And our Mishnah is not like him. Wow. When it says upliga de, then, at least according to some Rishonim, what the Gemara is saying is, you know, our Mishnah is arguing on something we always took as a given. This is upliga, and our Mishnah is arguing on what everyone always knew, the opinion of so-and-so. It's not necessarily coming to weaken that opinion, sometimes coming to strengthen that opinion, or at least to give us an indication that was a strong opinion among Chazal. So here the Gemara says, Matnitin, our Mishnah to Lok Rabbi Yehuda is not like the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda, the Tanya, as we learned in a Braisa, in Ben Yom Tov, the Shabbos, El Ochel Nefesh. There's no difference between Yom Tov and Shabbos other than Ochel Nefesh. Rabbi Yehuda matir av machshirei Ochel Nefesh. Rabbi Yehuda permits one even to make machshirei Ochel Nefesh. You have to prepare a pot to cook your food, you could prepare a pot. You have to cut down wood to make a fire to cook your food, you could cut down wood. Rabbi Yehuda permits you to do machshirei Ochel Nefesh, correct? Ken, kulanu yachad, we're all together? Good. I said something wrong and none of you noticed. Rabbi Yehuda permits you Machshirei Ochel Nefesh. You guys remember what the word af indicates?
Either even or also.
Oh, what does the word af indicate, though? Secondary, on a lower level, we brought a machlokes and tosas, tushitas and tosas, when I have the word afen oyubos anes. Even they were included in the miracle. Af indicates, we usually assume, even though it's a machlokes and tosas, two pinions and tosas, but af usually indicates on a lower level. So Rabbi Yehuda permits me, but not on the same level of permissiveness. Af machshir ochel nefesh. You could even do the machshirim, but on a lower level than I permitted the ochel nefesh. How so? I don't know. That if we'd explore Rabbi Yehuda's shita, we'd learn.
Did he die? Is that
what?
Is it the level that the Rabbi was speaking about? Not la tefila.
We don't know. Well, as we learn, you'll see the expansion of this. Let's continue. Right now, you know, af is secondary, not as strong as the first one. How so? Is it only b'dieved or other ways? With time, you'll see. Here, it's not worth delving into because this is an opinion that's not la halacha. Weiter. My time in the Tanakama. What does the word my time mean?
What's the reason?
What does the word my time mean? What is the source? What is the source for the first opinion in the Braisa? Amar Kro, the verse says, you may prepare food for Yom Tiv. Hu levado yaseh lachem. It says in the verse, Ach asher yachel lechon nefesh, but that which can be consumed by all souls. Hu levado yaseh lachem, that alone shall be made for you. Who we derive? Who is a miyut? It, specifically. Who? V'lo machshirav. And not the things that you need in order to make it. It itself that you make. The food itself can be made. But not the tools or the things you need in order to make the food. That's called machshirei ochel nefesh. V'Rabbi Yehuda. And how? What does Rabbi Yehuda do? How does Rabbi Yehuda derive his halacha? It says in the verse, Hu levado yaseh lochem. Why does it say lochem? For all of your needs, all encompassing. The other opinion too, haktiv lachem. The verse says a word that seems to be inclusive. It says lachem. That's teaching us lachem velo lov de kochavim, lachem velo laklavim. You can make the food for you, the Torah is saying, for you, but you can't start cooking for ov de kochavim or for dogs. Veidachnami haktiv. Who? What does Rabbi Yehuda do with the fact that it says in the Pasuk, who? Who seems to indicate it alone? The food alone may be prepared and not the machshirim. So how does Rabbi Yehuda permit us to prepare the machshirim on Yom Tev? Answers the Gemara, k'tiv hu v'k'tiv lachem. It says both, right? It says who? It says lachem. So what do I do with who and lachem? I have one Pasuk that indicates do. I have one Pasuk that indicates don't. We have a rule, we say every morning, Shnei Ktuvim and Makrashim Zetze, when I have two psukim that contradict one another. What do? I don't know. Achevo ketuv ha-shishi v'yachemenim. So I have a third pasuk that tells me how to balance the two, right? One pasuk says, work your fields. One pasuk says, learn Torah. Which am I supposed to do? Learn Torah or work my fields? So machloket. Here I don't have a third pasuk that rules between them. One opinion says, balance the two. The other opinion says, no, you learn Torah. Man will come down from heaven. Two opinions, Rav Shimon Bar Yochai and Rav Yishmael, machlokes in the Gemara. Which way do I go? Machlokes. Says about Yom Tiv. Yom Tiv is supposed to be Shabbos Lashem. Shabbos Lachem. One pasuk says it's a Shabbos for God. One pasuk says it's a Shabbos for us. Which one is it? Am I supposed to spend all of Yom Tiv indulging? It's for me. Or am I supposed to spend all of Yom Tiv davening in shul and learning for Hashem or for me? Machlokes in the Gemara. It's two psukim, two opposite indications. No third pasuk to come and tell me what to do. No pasuk shlishi she'achayah b'neim. What do I do? Machloket. One opinion says you have a choice. You could spend the day indulging, but then don't spend any time learning. You got to spend all day doing that mitzvah. You could spend the day all day learning and in shul and only have your regular meals. But then spend all the day learning. That's one opinion. The other opinion, which we rule like, says no, half-half. One pasuk says for Hashem, one pasuk says for you, so do half-half. Go to shul and have a longer davening. By the time you get home, it's almost noontime. And the rest of the day, enjoy. Right? That's what we do. We do half-half. Half the day we indulge. Half the day we do spiritual things. Half-half, because we have two psukim. So, here too, we have one pasuk that has two indications and no third pasuk that tells me what the balance is. Right? Another example would be Chol HaMoed. The Torah says, rest. The Torah says, you only have to rest the first day and the last day. Well, which one is it? Do I rest all seven? Or do I rest the first and the last? Came along Chazal and said, somewhere in the middle, we'll tell you what the balance is. Right? Yeah, you guys with me? So you have, usually we say when you have two contradictory indications, we wait for a third source that will tell us how to balance the two. And if I don't have a third source, what do I do? So then I look to the rabbis. Some say you have a choice between the two. And we go with the opinion that says, almost always we go with the opinion that says, how to balance the two. It's not either or, but a balance. So here says Rabbi Yehuda, I have in the Pasuk two indicators. One indicator says, K'tiv, who? The Pasuk says, it shall be performed, the food. And I understand from that, it and not the machshirim. K'tiv lachem. It also says in the Pasuk, for you, seemingly encompassing anything you need, including the machshirim. I have two contradictory indications in the Pasuk. How do I balance the two? I say like this. Kan b'machshirim she'efshar la'asotan me'erev yom tov. The machshirei ochel nevish that I could have done before yom tov. I say, buddy, no doing that on yom tov. You should have done that before yom tov. And when does Rabbi Yehuda let me do things on Yom Tov? Those are things you couldn't have done before Yom Tov. The guy says, look, what's a machshir in chief shall sosa meir Yom Tov? Let's say the guy says, I want fresh meat. So I have to go slaughter an animal? Okay, that's really ochel nefesh. Everyone agrees that's mutal. What else would be allowed? Sharpen your knife, you could have done before Yom Tov.
So what, you didn't think about getting the meat?
Maybe we'll have to think which machshirim Rabbi Yehuda talks about. Which machshirim couldn't you have done before Yom Tov? Let's say, what would be machshirim I couldn't have done before Yom Tov? I don't know. I don't have an example that comes to mind. Okay, but we understand the difference. So Rabbi Yehuda says this is the balance. I have two indicators in the Pasuk, I balance them. And really, Rabbi Yehuda, here we see that the machlokes in Rabbi Yehuda and Chachamim is smaller. It's not as big as we thought. It's not that Rabbi Yehuda lets you make a pot. Rabbi Yehuda says you should have made the pot before Yom Tov. When does Rabbi Yehuda allow you to prepare machshirim? Machshirim that you couldn't have prepared before Yom Tov. What would be an example of that? I don't know. Yes, sir?
Well, how does Rabbi Yehuda deal with food? The Mishnah deals with lachem. There's two answers for lachem, but I didn't understand how Rabbi Yehuda answers.
Rabbi Yehuda says the who indicates to minimize the derivation from lachem. Who seemingly indicates not the machshirim. Lachem indicates all the machshirim. Well, is it none or all? Somewhere in between. Not those which you could have done before, and yes, those which you couldn't have done before. Okay, so let's summarize what we just see. The Mishnah said the only difference between Yom Tov and Shabbos is that on Yom Tov you may prepare Ochel Nefesh. Says the Gemara, so I understand from that our Mishnah holds that Machshirei Ochel Nefesh you may not prepare on Yom Tov. Says the Gemara, this is to the exclusion of the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda holds, you may prepare Machshirei Ochel Nefesh. Then the Gemara asks, what's the source for Rabbi Yehuda and Chachamim? The Gemara says, the Pasuk says, who the food for Yom Tov may be prepared on Yom Tov. That indicates like Chachamim, only the food and not the Machshirim, not the tools, not the things that are necessary for preparing the food. The Gemara says, well, what does Rabbi Yehuda do? He learns from the word Lachem. Prepare for you all that you need, including the preparatory things for preparing the food, the machshirei ochel nefesh. What does Rabbi Yehuda do with, what do Chacham do with lachem? Lachem indicates for you and not ovdei kochavim and animals. What does Rabbi Yehuda do with the word who that seemingly indicates the food alone may be prepared and not anything else? He says that's coming to minimize the understanding of lachem, to teach me the synthesis between the two, or symbiosis, what's it called? When you combine two. That's taking both words of the Pasuk and saying, okay, what's the balance between the two? You can prepare on Yom Tov the Machshirei Ochel Nefesh, which you couldn't have prepared before Yom Tov. Next Mishnah. How we doing? Okay. Ein ben Shabbos leYom HaKippurim. Should we go on a small tangent that'll give us a little bit of an interesting perspective, or just move forward?
Please.
Yeah, go on tangents. Give me 1 second. Let me get a Rambam Sefer HaMitzvos. there's a very interesting Rambam in the Sefer Mitzvos, Mitzvah Kuf Samach Zayin, 167. Before we see the Rambam, let's review some laws. We know that on Shabbos, we have to rest. We can't do the 49 melachos, right? V'ol Masechet, Kol Masechet Shabbos, right? And we have V'ol Masechet Zeruvin.
39.
I said 49, 39, yeah, thank you. Now, we know that on Yom Kippur, we also, we fast. Shabbat, Shabbaton. And we know that on Yom Tiv, we're allowed to prepare Ochel Nefesh, right? Yom Tiv doesn't have all the stringencies of Shabbos. So, we would think that when you view the laws of the Torah, you begin with Shabbos, because Shabbos was there from creation, and Shabbos was given in Mara, and then you evolve into either Yom Kippur or the holidays, etc. Right? That's the way we usually think about it. The Rambam has a very interesting way of presenting all of these laws. The Rambam says the order, he arranges the order differently. He says, I want you to know that the rest that we have to rest on these 6 days, meaning the 2 days of Sukkot, the 2 days of Pesach, first and last day of Sukkot, first and last day of Pesach, 1 day of Shavuot and 1 day of Rosh Hashanah, going biblically, right? On these 6 days, so the Torah gave us 6 days of rest, biblically, 6 days, six Yemim Tovim, they all have the same laws. Rosh Hashanah, Sukkot, Shavuos, Pesach, yeah, they all have the same halachos, biblically. And none of them have different laws than the other ones when it comes to how you should rest, biblically, on the Yom Tov. And the permissiveness of preparing Ochel Nefesh, of preparing food for Yom Tov, is equal in all six. And therefore, when we discuss the laws of resting on Yom Tov, biblically, the laws we're discussing encompasses all six. And you want to know those laws, learn the tractate Beitza, the tractate that the Rishonim called Yom Tov. But when it comes to resting on Shabbos and Yom Kippur, you take the same resting you have on Yom Tov, plus you add some stringencies to it. So the Rambam builds it upwards. We would have described it that Shabbos is the base point, and Yom Tov is more lenient. Yom Tov has leniencies. The Rambam says, no, Yom Tov, you rest. But the Torah permitted Ochel Nefesh. Along comes Shabbos, and Shabbos has a bunch of stringencies on top of Yom Tov, Shabbos and Yom Kippur. Okay, that's just the build of the Rambam is a little bit unique, and it requires some thought, what the Rambam's telling us in setting it up that way. Yes, sir.
This would go with what the Rav said earlier about how they wrote the same law, the same source, but there's two different sources.
Possibly. That deserves separate discussion, right? Okay, so now our Mishnah moves onward to Shabbos and Yom Kippur. The Mishnah says, "Ein ben Shabbat liyom Kippurim ela shezez dono bin de'adam vezez dono bekaret." Same thing as we've been discussing all along about the Ein Ben. There's no difference between Shabbos and Yom Kippur, other than that. On Shabbos, if a person purposely does melacha, so then he, if there were witnesses and he was forewarned, then he gets executed by the human court. And on Yom Kippur, he gets kares, he gets cut off in heaven, but we can't touch him down below. Again, the Gemara says, Hale'in yan tashlumin, zeveze shavin. But with regard to payment, they are both equal. What are we talking about? So, we have a rule that Gemara derives from Pasuk. The Pasuk says, "Velo yiyeh ason," if a person hits a pregnant woman, and there isn't a catastrophe, she doesn't die from hit, but she does get damaged, anosh yanesh, he has to pay up for the damages he caused. So from there we derive, it's only in times when there isn't a catastrophe, when no one gets killed, that they have to pay. But if a person did something that technically he should get killed for it, then even though at the same time he caused monetary damage to someone, he would not have to pay. That's the rule that's called in the Shas, Kamle b'derabba mine. He's gotten the bigger punishment already. You don't give him the smaller punishment. Once he's getting the bigger punishment of the death penalty, he does not get the lower punishment of paying money. Adam, you with us? Okay, so now this concept, the Talmud goes through in many different places, and there are details that are difficult to understand. For example, let's say a guy is going to break someone's car on Shabbos. As he's bashing the window, which is not a biblical prohibition, he won't get the death penalty. He brings along two witnesses and say, watch, I'm going to turn on this match. At the same time, bam, swings both hands, turns on the match, breaks the window. You can't make me pay for the window, guys, because I deserve the death penalty. Ah, you didn't warn me. You didn't catch me in time. So sorry. Technically, halachically, he's right. He did at the same moment, even though it's two different actions, he did at the same moment something which he should get the death penalty for. The Torah says a guy who did something he should get the death penalty for does not have to pay. Okay? So the applications are not necessarily what we think they are. The classical case, the case in the Torah, is where he did one action. He punched a pregnant woman, caused her damages, has to pay. Torah says, provided that he's not going to get the death penalty for it. If he would get the death penalty, he wouldn't have to pay for the other damages. So we assume, okay, a guy does something that he's going to get the death penalty. Let's say a guy stole a car on Shabbos. So he turned on the car, he drove out of the guy's house. Or let's say he took the guy's ox out of his house, and or he lifted the guy had a jewel, he had a painting. He took his painting out of his house, and just as he took it out of his house, he took it into Rosh Hashanah, into public domain. So for the same action, the same moment, he also brought it into his possession. He did theft, and at the same moment, he also did a biblical transgression of taking something from private domain into public domain on Shabbos. So that I understand, he should get the death penalty for that sin. So he doesn't have to pay, even though technically he might not get the death penalty if there were no witnesses and no warning. But it was an action that really he should get the death penalty for. But we just explained that there are applications that are not so simple of this halacha. One area where this is discussed throughout the Talmud is, what do you say if he's going to get the death penalty at the hands of heaven? Right? A guy does the same action, only on Yom Kippur. He steals the painting, takes it out of private domain into public domain on Yom Kippur. So on Yom Kippur, for doing that malacha, he's going to get death penalty at the hands of heaven. He's not going to get the death penalty here below. Do we also say kamle b'derabba mine? Do we also say this rule when it comes to misa b'dei shamayim? So that's a machlokas. So the
which is greater, the kares or the human authority one? Because what if you say you have Yom Tov on Shabbos, or not Yom Tov, you have Yom Kippur on Shabbos,
right?
Comes a farm and you wake something, then you have both,
right?
Is
good
the
question.
One that takes precedence?
Yeah, humans, the human court. So it's a good question. So the Gemara wants to understand from here that ha'le'inyan tashlumin zev zeh shavin. Our Mishnah says the only difference between Shabbos and Yom Kippur is whether the death penalty is administered by human court or by the heavenly court. We want to understand from here ha, but le'inyan tashlumin, when it comes to payment, zev zeh shavin, they must be equal. That you say kam le'bidirabba minei, irrespective of whether he'll get the death penalty down below or up above. Matnitin Rabbi Nechunya v'nakana. Our Mishnah must be the opinion of Rabbi Nechunya v'nakana. D'tanya Rabbi Nechunya v'nakana. Hayal set Yom Kippurim k'Shabbat l'tashlumin. He used to make Yom Kippur like Shabbos when it comes to payment. Ma Shabbat mitrev v'nafsho patum l'tashlumin. Just like Shabbos, he gets a death penalty and therefore he will not have to pay. Av Yom Kippurim mitchayev minafsho ufatum natashlumin. Yom Kippur too, he's going to get the death penalty. We won't administer it, but he's going to die, and therefore he will not have to pay. So our Mishnah, according to this understanding, is going in line with the opinion of Rav Nechunya ben Akona, that we say kam le bidirabba minei, even with regard to misa bidei shamayim, death at the hands of the heavenly court. So far so good? Yeah? Right. Tanan Hassam, what does that mean?
We have a Mishnah.
What does Hassam mean?
They're
over there. What difference does it make if it's over here or over there? One day we'll have to discuss it, but you should know there's a difference. There's a halachic difference, an inferential difference, and Rashi and the post can discuss it. But with time we'll have to discuss what the difference is, where the source of a Mishnah is. There's a halachic difference. We'll learn it with time. Nan hatam. We learned in the Mishnah over there, and the Mishnah says the following. Kol chayvei kiritut shelaku nifteru midei kiritutan. All people that should have gotten kares for what they did, and instead they got malchus. A guy is about to pick an apple off the tree. Two witnesses are standing there and say, don't do it. If you do it, you will get lashes. That's not true. If he does it, he should get the death penalty. He should get kares. But they didn't warn him correctly. They said he will get lashes. And then the court said, okay, you were warned. You did it anyways. So they gave him lashes. So then, says the Mishnah, Nifteru midei kritutan, they will no longer get cut off in the hands of heaven. Shenemar, as the verse says, when a Jew gets lashes, v'nikla achicha leinecha, your brother will be shamed before your eyes. The Torah purposely calls him your brother to tell us, kevan shelaka, once he got his punishment, hareu keachicha, he's your brother again. Don't look at him as a sinner. No, that's it. He paid his debt. Divrei Rabbi Hananya ben Gamliel. This is the opinion of Rabbi Hananya ben Gamliel. Adkan, so far so good. Yeah? A Jew was supposed to get kares for what he did. He got makos instead. Tells us Rabbi Hananya ben Gamliel. That's it. He's clean. Back to being a kosher Jew. Amar Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan told. Who's Rabbi Yochanan? What did he compose?
The Yerushalmi Talmud.
Who was his Rebbe? Rabbi Yannai. Who was his brother-in-law? Reish Lakish. Okay. Omar Rabbi Yochanan, Chalukin alav chaverav al Rabbi Hananya ben Gamliel. His friends disagree with him on Rabbi Hananya ben Gamliel. They don't agree with him. They hold that even if he got his lashes, it's not over. That doesn't come instead of kares. Amar Rava, Amri Bei Rav. Rava said, they say in the Academy of Rav the following source. Tanina, we have a Mishnah that indicates that his friends disagree with him. This concept that Rabbi Yochanan said on tradition, we found a source for it in the Mishnah. What's the source? Our Mishnah. Our Mishnah says, "En ben Yom Kippurim neShabbat, ela shezeh zidono bidei Adam, vezeh zidono biikaret." There's no difference in Yom Kippur and Shabbos, other than the fact that for Yom Kippur, if a person purposely sinned, he'll get kares. On Shabbos, he'll get misa bidei Adam, he'll get death penalty at the hands of the court. V'imitan, if you'll say like Rabbi Hananya ben Gamliel, if really the rabbis agreed with him that a person can get lashes instead of kares and be free, then they both have the capacity of being punished by humans. Our Mishnah says Yom Kippur is not punishable by a human court. And if it's so, like Rabbi Hananya ben Gamliel holds, that if the human court gave him lashes instead of giving him kares, then they free him of the kares technically, then Yom Kippur is also punishable by the courts down below. So the Gemara wants to take our Mishnah as an indication that the rabbis in general did not agree with Rabbi Hananya ben Gamliel. They did not feel that the courts down below can give lashes instead of kares and free the guy. Yeah? Amar Rav Nachman, Hamani Rabbi Yitzchaki. Rav Nachman says, who says everyone disagrees? This Mishnah is one opinion. It's Rabbi Yitzchak. Rabbi Yitzchak says that you can't give lashes. No such concept. It's not a question of will the lashes come instead of the kares or not. The Torah didn't administer lashes. The Torah said don't do it, and a guy who does it gets kares. There's no such concept of lashes. Lashes is a punishment. Yeah, lashes is when there's a regular lav. A regular lav, we say, you know what, the Torah didn't say anything. The Torah gave us a rule over a regular lav. You get lashes, okay, you give lashes. But if this guy, the Torah says, don't do melacha on Shabbos. You do melacha, by mistake, you bring a chatas. On purpose, if there are witnesses, and they warned you, death penalty. If there are no witnesses, but you did it on purpose, you get kares. Where do you get this concept that the witnesses can tell him a punishment that the Torah doesn't say? Doesn't say it anywhere in the Torah that you can give lashes over this, Avera, right? The guy's about to eat chalev. He walks into McDonald's, he wants to eat chalev, non-kosher meat. The witnesses walk in and say, you know, you're going to get lashes if you do that. He takes a bite. Go tell the courts. Okay, they go and tell the courts. He gets lashes. No, says Rabbi Yitzchak. Torah doesn't say you give lashes over that. Torah says God will cut his life short. But how can you give him lashes over something the Torah didn't administer lashes for? So our Mishnah is not all of his friends who disagree with him. Our Mishnah is the opinion of Rabbi Yitzchak. It's never in the hands of the human court. Rabbi Yitzchak holds. That was not given into their hands. It's not an issue of does it free him or doesn't it free him. It doesn't happen. The courts would never give him the lashes. Just because the witnesses said it doesn't mean the courts would do it. So Amar Rav Nachman says, Ha Mani, who is the author of our Mishnah? Rabbi Yitzchak, it is the opinion of Rabbi Yitzchak. The Amar Rabbi Yitzchak holds Malkut, the Chavei Kritut, Leka. No such concept as giving Malkus on something that the Torah said is Chayav Kares for. Titania, as we learned in a Braisa, Rabbi Yitzchak Omer, Chavei Kritut Bichlalayu. Oh, okay. Gentlemen, are we focused? Yes? Okay. So, the Torah tells us a long list of women that we're not allowed to marry. Not allowed to marry your sister, you're not allowed to marry your aunt, you're not allowed to marry your granddaughter, a long list. And then the Torah says, and don't be immoral like the Canaanites who preceded you, and whoever does it will be cut off from his people. Whoever does it will be cut off from his nation. So after a long listing of the women that were prohibited from marrying in the end of Parashas Achrei Mos, the Torah tells us a generalization, a klal. All of these prohibited relationships, anyone who does it gets kares, gets cut off. Even one's own wife when she is a nida, any girl who's had her period and hasn't gone to mikveh after the proper preparations is a nida, also prohibited. One of the chayvei krisus. So far so good? Okay. So, Chayvei Kritut Bichlalayu, Rabbi Yitzchak taught the following rule. The Torah included all of these women who are prohibited with the generalization. Whoever lives with one of these women, Bichlal, in generalization, will get Kritut, Chayvei Kritut. Then the Torah comes and says another pasuk in the next parsha. It says, "Veish ki kach sachoso basaviv o vasimo." If someone marries his sister, son of his father, the daughter of his mother, doesn't matter, and he lives with her, terrible things, says the Torah, he's going to get kares. Why? Wait a second. You said all of them together in last week's parsha and Achrimos. Why does the Torah repeat one of them and tell us, and the sister is kares? Wait a second. You just said everyone is kares. What'd you say this one for again? Ve'lama yatzat karet ba'achoto. So then why did the Torah yatzat, take out, specify the punishment of kares again, specifically with regard to his sister, to teach us the following? Leduna be'karet ve'lo be'malkot. To stress the kares factor. To stress the punishment of kares, to tell you, when I said kares, I meant only kares, no malchus. I don't care if the witnesses said malchus. So, Rav Yitzchak is of the opinion that the Torah purposely repeated kares by a sister to teach us that a sister will get, that just like a sister, she'll get kares. One who lives with her, they'll get kares and only kares. No other punishment, even if the witnesses said otherwise. So far, so good? Yeah? Okay. I'm just contemplating how spread out we should get from this Gemara. There's a lot to discuss here. But let's finish till the end of the Gemara, and then we'll decide. Ravashi Omar. Afilu teima rabbanan ze ikaus dono bnei adam ze ikaus dono bikaret. Rav Ashi says, come on, let's say you go like Rav Hananya ben Gamliel. There could be a far-fetched case if the witnesses mess it up and they give the wrong warning that the courts will hit him. That's not what the Mishnah is talking about. Our Mishnah says, no difference between Yom Kippur and Shabbos. Other than that, on Shabbos, the courts down below give him the death penalty. On Yom Kippur, the courts above give him the death penalty. Oh, you found a far-fetched case where even on Yom Kippur, the courts down below would give him a punishment. That's not the main case. That's not what the Mishnah was talking about. The Mishnah meant, in general, this is in the hands of this court, this is in the hands of that court. The Mishnah didn't say there are no exceptions. The Mishnah said, in general, that's the difference. So Rav Ashi just gives us a simple answer that does away with the whole thing until here. Okay. Atkan, we have clarity? David, yeah?
Yeah.
Moshe, yeah? Adam? Okay. So can we go a little bit deeper?
Of course.
There are a lot of things we could learn from this Gemara. Okay. Let's begin with the first thing that should bother us when we read this Gemara. Rabbi Hananya ben Gamliel's opinion seems to be very, very, very difficult to understand. The Torah told us that a person that does a sin is going to get punishment A, B, or C. Along comes Rabbi Hananya ben Gamliel and says, you know what, if the witnesses warn them he'll get punishment X, he can get punishment X, and not only that, that comes instead of what the Torah said he should get. What? What's going on here? Free for all. Right? So that's the first thing that should bother us. So he quotes a pasuk. He has to have a pasuk or a tradition. You can't just say something like that. But we have to understand that his opinion should bother us. You read something like that in the Gemara, you say, wait a second, how does that work? Right? Your Torah says this, witnesses warned that, and suddenly we say, yeah, okay, we'll do that. Who said? There has to be a basis from God to do something like that. Either tradition from Sinai or a pasuk, one or the other, but there's no other way to do that. Or derivation from the Torah. So that's one thing we should just notice when we read a Gemara like this. Number two, after he brought us the source, so the question is, how acceptable is his source? Meaning the Gemara doesn't ask, well, what do the other opinions do with his source? So we could walk away and say, okay, he had a tradition to derive this way. They must have had a different tradition what to do with the pasuk. Yes? But one of the things we should notice with the when we read a Gemara is, who's the Gemara siding with, so to speak? Meaning, which opinions does the Gemara seem to go along with? And which opinions is the Gemara like, okay, prove that, explain that, what do you do about this? Who's the Gemara on the attack? Who's the Gemara attacking, and who's the Gemara accepting? The Gemara takes sides, and sometimes we learn halacha from those sides. So far, so good? Okay. We reach the bottom line in the Gemara. The Gemara begins by trying to take sides against Rabbi Hananya ben Gamliel. Gemara says, Rabbi Yochanan says, you know, everyone disagrees with him. He's a loner. Rabbi Hananya ben Gamliel says, you gave Malchus instead? No, no one agrees with that. Right? That's the first step. Then the Gemara comes and makes a switch. The Gemara says, no, maybe not. Maybe not everyone disagrees with him. And then the Gemara does something the exact opposite. The Gemara says, our Mishnah is the opinion of Rabbi Yitzchak who disagrees. Now, if you'd ask me, I'd say, here's a source, Rabbi Yitzchak disagrees, end of story. The Gemara doesn't do that. The Gemara forces a source for Rabbi Yitzchak's opinion. Meaning the Gemara seems to have switched sides at this point. The Gemara seems to be saying, you know what, Rabbi Hananya ben Gamliel brought a source. Now you, Rabbi Yitzchak, if you want to disagree with him, prove it. Meaning, if we, remember, where did our conversation begin with? We began by saying, if the Torah said this, and you want to do different than the Torah, you better have a source for it, right? Now you brought the source, what did everyone else do with that source? So we began by saying, well, no one else agrees with that. Then we said, well, maybe not. Maybe they don't all disagree with him. And then we say, okay, so one person disagrees with him. So you think, okay, one person disagrees, end of story. No, the Gemara has to bring a source. The Gemara says, you know what? Why does he disagree? He has a pasuk that indicates that when the Torah says kares, you could only do kares. You can't do anything else. Well, wait a second. What did I think? If the Torah said kares, why would I think I could do something else? Why does the Torah have to tell me, when I say kares, I mean kares and only kares and nothing else? What do you mean? And when the Torah says something else, it does mean something else. I mean, this Gemara shouldn't make sense to us at this point. Read the Gemara, and the Gemara says, you know why the Pasuk had to repeat itself? To tell you that when it said it the first time, it meant it. It and nothing else. Torah says, kares for all the prohibited women. And then the Torah repeats it by a sister to tell you, you know what? When I said kares before, I meant kares. And if you do malchus, no good. And why would I think otherwise, guys, right?
Isn't it already implied from the first time?
Right. That's what we said. So the Gemara here at the bottom of the page should bother us.
The second chorus, in the case of the sister, we could be saying, what happens if the special case where witnesses warned him for the wrong punishment?
So what?
Well, that's why we have our second source.
My dear, if witnesses walk in and say, if you do work on Shabbos, we're going to hang you by your feet for 30 days. Do I need a pasuk to tell me I'm not going to do that?
Well,
no, witnesses don't control Torah. Torah gave him 3 potential punishments. And this isn't one of them.
Rabbi Gamliel has a source for this.
Oh, so here we're faced with a question. Where is my base understanding? We began by saying basic logic would indicate that you don't accept a punishment other than what the Torah said. But if that were so true, then why does Rav Yitzchak have to bring a source for his opinion? He could just say, I don't have your tradition to derive the pasuk that way. It's the Torah doesn't, the Gemara doesn't do that. The Gemara seems to take sides with Rabbi Hananya ben Gamliel and say, hey, you Rabbi Yitzchak, where'd you get this from? That if the Torah says kares, it means only kares? Say what? Wait a second, what? Torah said kares, it means kares, like Adam said. Said it the first time, why does that say it a second time? Nachon? So there's a deeper point here that we have to understand. For some reason, the Gemara seems to have accepted that when the Torah said kares, it could have also meant malchus. Now, at face value, that doesn't make sense, like we said until now, right? So we have to learn more Talmud to discover what's the reason behind that. Why would the Gemara accept an opinion to the extent that the Gemara says, if you disagree with this opinion, you prove it? Accept an opinion that says when the Torah said kares, well, included in that was also worst comes to worst, also malchus. Why? And as we learn Talmud, we will keep that question in the back of our minds, and one day we'll discover an answer. But you have to realize the question, because the Gemara here switched sides. The Gemara reached a point where the Gemara said, really, when I said kares, no, could have meant malchus. Prove it that not. Oh, you have a source? Okay, so you could disagree with me. So, I don't want to go into what the logic here. That would take too long. But really, when you learn Maseches Makos, remember this question, and you'll have a lot of insight into certain sugyas in Makos. That's not for tonight. I mean, enough. We've digressed enough. You guys with me?
Yeah.
Okay. Back to the Gemara. Daf Ches Amud Aleph. There are a few more points we should make. Okay, we'll get to them in other Gemaras. Right. No, there's an important Tosus here, an important Machlokas Rashi Tosus, but we have to cover ground. There are a few important points in this Sugiya. Let's leave it. Their points will encounter other places in Shas, and this is just the first time you're learning Gemara Megillah. You'll learn more. You'll get back to this. Maybe even this year. And it's all online. Okay. We're at the Mishnah. We're continuing with the Ein Bein, right? Ein Bein, says the Mishnah. Ein Bein amudar anam mechaviro, amudar mimenu machal, el adrisat regel vekelim shenosin ben ochel nefesh. There's no difference between a person who is a mudar hana'ah. He took a vow that he will have no pleasure from his fellow man. He says, Joe Shmo, I take a vow, I swear every hana'ah, every object you have should be forbidden. Its hana'ah should be forbidden on me like a sacrifice. What is a neder? A neder is? A neder is? We'll tangenticize again. Okay, let's go on a tangent. Hey guys, look, we have to decide here. Is our class to learn Talmud skills alone, or also to give you general knowledge like we do on Thursday night? If you want general knowledge, that'll help you in all of Talmud, so then we'll expand, and then we'll... If you want to continue with like we've known until now, so okay, we'll stay focused. I say we stay focused. Let's stay focused. Okay. So in a nutshell, classical neder is in Kochim. A neder is that I say this animal is a sacrifice, or I accept the responsibility to bring a sacrifice. That's a neder of Kochim. And within Kochim, there's neder and nedova. Neder is I am responsible, nedova is this animal is holy. And then the Torah taught us a special halacha that we can expand the concept of Kochim onto other objects in our lives. So we can say, your Gemara should be unto me like an animal that's designated for holiness. That's a neder. I take an object and I say that object should be distanced from me the same way holy items are distanced from me. You guys got that? People sometimes say, I took a vow. What was your vow? I will eat this and this tomorrow. That's not a neder. The question is it a shvua? A shvua is when a person takes a vow, I will do something. That's a shvua. Shvua is about me. Neder is about an object. And sometimes people word it in a way that's not this nor that. So mudar hano, a person takes a vow, he says, all of your objects should be forbidden on me, like the sacrifices. Okay? So, they also had code words that meant that. Konam, konas, konas. They had all kinds of words that were accepted to mean it should be prohibited as such. So, if a person takes a vow, I should have no pleasure from any object you have, that's a mudar hana'a. He takes a neder, all objects that you have, the pleasure of all objects you have should be prohibited on me, like the pleasure from an animal that's designated for sacrifice. That's a neder, right? It's hal on the cheftza. You guys know this is lamdus. Cheftza is the object. Gavra is giver, is the human being. In yeshivas, they like to talk about, you're going to go to Chabad one day, right? So they're going to talk to you about a cheftza and a gavra, right? Yeah, whenever you go to yeshiva, they'll take these same concepts that we're talking about and they'll use Talmudic yeshivish terms for them. Yeah, in Talmudic yeshivish terms, when you designate an object, you're talking about a chefetz, like a chefetz, an object. When you talk about a human being, me, my vow, my shvua, that's a gavra. And people always like to talk about, well, is this on the chefetz or the gavra? Is Hanukkah a mitzvah on me or my home? Is the menorah right? Oh, we always, people always like doing this. Okay, so now you know the classical Heftza Gavra. Right. Sitzis, that's a Gemara already asked. Chovas Gavra or Chovas Mana. Yeah, people like bringing this up all over. Yeah, okay.
Yeah,
it But now you know the Lundish terms for it. Yeshivish. Okay. It doesn't matter as long as you understand the concepts. And then that's more important. Yeah, but if you want to sound yeshivish, so then you gotta know how to talk. Okay. And then Amudarana Vechavero, there's no interesting someone who took a vow prohibiting himself to derive benefit from his friend. Lamudami menu machal, to someone who took a vow prohibiting food from his friend. Now, the Gemara here, the Mishnah here, has a very interesting understanding. Let's say I take a vow, I will not derive any benefit of your food. You will not give me any benefit of food. And then I come to you and I say, can I borrow your car for an hour? So technically, your car didn't give me food. But if I needed to rent that car, it would cost me money, right? That money can buy food, right? So the Mishnah says the following. There's no difference between if you took a vow not to derive benefit to if you took a vow not to derive food. The only difference would be, are you allowed to walk on his property? Derisat, the walking of haregel, the foot. Vekelim she'en osin ben ochel nefesh, and vessels that you do not use to make food with. Yeah? In Rashi's quick to add that we mean vessels that are not rented. Because if you would have to rent it, and you saved money, and that money buys you food, so that's the same idea. We together? Yeah? Okay. Again, same format. We understand that when it comes to vessels that you use to make food, you want to borrow from the guy his knife, his meat knife, or his vessels that he uses for food, his plate, they're equal. The guy's prohibited from borrowing this or that. Doesn't matter. Once he took a vow, he's not going to have any food benefit from him. He may not borrow those vessels as well. When it says you may not walk on his property if you took a vow that you won't have any benefit from him. If you took a vow that you just won't have food from him, then you may walk on his property. That is one of the differences between the two. Derisat regel, the capacity to walk on his property. Ask the Gemara, halokap de inche, why is that considered that you derive benefit from him? That's something that people don't care. It's not like he gives you permission to walk on his property. Everyone takes a shortcut through his yard. People don't care. Amarava Hamani Rabbi Eliezer, Damar Vitur Asu B'Mudar Hana'a. Hamani, who is the author of the Mishnah, whose opinion is the Mishnah going with? The opinion of Rabbi Eliezer. You were in class last night. What did we learn about Rabbi Eliezer? Rabbi Eliezer is Shah Muti. You remember the story of Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Eliezer? So what we say at the end of that story, no halacha is going to be like Rabbi Eliezer. And we also already discussed that the Gemara is going to do anything to avoid being in this quandary of making a Mishnah Rabbi Eliezer, because what the Gemara just did was mix the Mishnah. When the Gemara says this Mishnah is the opinion of Rabbi Eliezer, the Gemara is basically telling you, okay, and the Mishnah is not halacha. So the Gemara tries to avoid it. Who's Rabbi Eliezer? Rabbi Eliezer is Rabbi Eliezer ben Hurkanus. Rabbi Eliezer ben Hurkanus argued with Rabbi Gamliel. Rabbi Gamliel in his court put him in ostracism. Because of that, they decided no halacha is going to be like him. So even though Rabbi Eliezer is the first Tana in Shas, the first Tana to appear in Shas is Rabbi Eliezer. And he shows up all over Shas, and he was a giant. At the end of the day, the halacha is not like him. Yeah? So you have to understand that the Gemara does not like to say how many Rabbi Eliezer he. Because what the Gemara does when it does that is basically demote the Mishnah. Rabbi Eliezer is of the opinion that he holds vitur asur b'mudar hana'a, even something that you would be mevater, something that you forgo everyone. You say, whoever wants could use it, I don't mind. Whoever wants to could sit on my bench. I have a bench in front of my house. Whoever wants could sit on my bench, I don't care. But if you took a vow that you will have no benefit from this person, Rabbi Eliezer is of the opinion that vitur, even something that you would easily forgo, is asur, prohibited, b'mudar hana'a, with someone who took a vow not to have any benefit. Clear? Gentlemen, move on. Next Mishnah. Okay. We have 5 minutes. Should we make a run for the next Mishnah or review what we did today? Let's review what we did today. Okay? We began with the Mishnah that said there's no difference between Shabbos and Yom Tov other than Ochel Nefesh. We looked up the Rambam that showed us a very interesting ordering that we begin with Yom Tov, and then we say, and Shabbos adds on to Yom Tov. We said that is counterintuitive, as Shabbos was commanded from the time of creation. I mean, the Torah already introduced us to Shabbos in Bereishis, and Shabbos was commanded to the Jewish people still back in Mara, even before the Ten Commandments. And we would think Shabbos is the default and everything else revolves around Shabbos. The Rambam, for whatever reason, describes it the other way. So our Mishnah says, the only difference between Shabbos and Yom Tov is the capacity to prepare Ochel Nefesh, food that people eat on Yom Tov. We understood the Mishnah to be teaching us that Machshirei Ochel Nefesh, the things that are necessary to prepare that food, such as a pot and a pan, our Mishnah holds, one is prohibited from preparing on Yom Tov. We said our Mishnah is going not like the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda. We said there are two ways in which the Gemara can word that. The Gemara could say, matnitin delo, our Mishnah is not the opinion of. We said the Gemara could say, upliga de, we are arguing on. When the Gemara says, upliga de, the Gemara is indicating that that opinion was the given and known opinion. When the Gemara says, matnitin delo, our Mishnah is not like the opinion, the Gemara is indicating that we will side with our Mishnah, and that opinion is being pushed down. So our Mishnah is not like the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda, who permits us to prepare af, and we brought the machlokes Rishonim, whether the word af means on a lesser level. Rabbi Yehuda holds that af machshirei ochel nefesh, even the preparatory items of ochel nefesh may also be prepared on Yom Tov. We asked what is the source. We said the verse says, Hu levado yaseh lachem. Tana Kama says, Hu indicates it and not the machshirim. Rabbi Yehuda says there's a balance. It says Hu, not machshirim. It says lachem, to teach you anything you need. What's the balance between them? Whatever you need that you couldn't have prepared before Yom Tov. That is what Rabbi Yehuda permits you to prepare on Yom Tov, the machshirim that you could not have prepared before Yom Tov. Tana Kama says the word lachem indicates only food for you and not for ovid kochamvim or animals. Next Mishnah. The Mishnah said, Ein men Shabbat v'yom ha-kippurim. There's no difference between Shabbos and Yom Kippur, other than the fact that on Yom Kippur the death penalty is administered by the courts down below, and on Yom Kippur it's by the courts up above, and on Shabbos it's the courts down below. We introduced the concept of kam lebidirabba mine, that the Torah says that when a man punches a pregnant woman and she is damaged but she does not die, being that he will not get the death penalty, he should pay. From that we derive kam lebidirabba mine. Had he gotten the death penalty, he would not have to pay. We said there is a machlokas. Do we say it's only a death penalty administered down below, or even a death penalty from the courts above? We said our Mishnah that says that Yom Kippur is administered by the courts up above, and that, I'm sorry, our Mishnah says there's no difference between Shabbos and Yom Kippur other than who administers the punishment, indicates that when it comes to payment, they're both equal. Both of them, you would have the rule of kam lebidirabba mine in accordance with the opinion of Reb Nechunya ben Akona, who says that a chayvei krisus, if someone is going to get the death penalty from above, he too is absolved from paying the monetary payment he had to pay for that same action, or for that same moment of action. We then discussed the Mishnah that says that if someone was supposed to get kares and he got malkos, he will no longer get kares. That was the opinion of Rabbi Hanani ben Gamliel, and we brought a source for it. Rabbi Yochanan said it, his friends disagree with him. Rava says, the house of Rav says, the academy of Rav says, from our Mishnah we see that, because our Mishnah says that Yom Kippur is punishable by the courts above alone. So you see that our Mishnah holds the Stam Mishnah. And you remember last week or 2 weeks ago, we quoted the Tosas and Sota. Stam Mishnah has two powers, you remember? Stam Mishnah is the Koach of Rabim, and Stam Mishnah is the Koach of Stam. It's two powers. Chachamim Omrim is Rabim. Stam Mishnah is stronger than Chachamim Omrim. Stam Mishnah is the Koach of the Rabim of Rebbe's Bezdin, plus the Koach of the Stam Mishnah. So our Stam Mishnah is indicative that all of Rabbi Hananya ben Gamliel's friends disagree with him. Rabbi Nachman disagreed. Rabbi Nachman said the author of our Mishnah would be Rabbi Yitzchak, that he holds that there's no such concept as giving lashes when the Torah says give kares. We brought a source for that the Torah has a klal and a dover ayotze min a klal. The Torah tells us all women prohibited, one who lives with them will get kares, and then the Torah tells us and the sister gets kares. It repeats the sister to indicate that kares alone and nothing else. So our Mishnah is maybe only Rabbi Yitzchak. Maybe the other friends don't disagree with Rabbi Hanani ben Gamliel. We concluded with Rav Ashi's answer. Rav Ashi said, our Mishnah could even be Rabbanan's opinion. Maybe they, when the Mishnah said he gets paid by the courts below, it mean, or by the courts above, it meant in general. That doesn't mean there can't be an exception if the witnesses mess up and tell them you'll get lashes. What would be then? That's not the topic of our Mishnah. You don't know. Our Mishnah could go with either opinion. The last Mishnah we saw was the Mishnah that said that if someone took a vow, he will have no benefit from his friend, or he took a vow that he won't have food. The only difference would be whether he could walk on property that he lets everyone walk, and whether he could borrow from him vessels that you don't use for food. We understood that vessels you use for food, that they're both prohibited from borrowing from him. We discussed that a neder is an offshoot of kodshim. A neder is on the cheftza. You take a vow, this object should be prohibited on me, just like an animal that were designated for a karbon. And a shavuah is on the gavra. By the way, people like to say this, it's wrong. But for now, stick to it. Everyone else thinks it's right. You'll learn nedarim and you'll learn shavuos, you'll see that it's not as blanket as they make it. Neder and shavuah are not exactly defined the way we said. But that's the common knowledge. So for now, you could stick to the common knowledge. But you guys better learn. Don't stick to this. If I meet you in 20 years and you're still saying this, we got a problem. learn Nedarim and learn Shavuos, and you'll see that this is inaccurate. This is not an accurate definition, but everyone says it. It's wrong. You'll see in Nedarim and in Shavuos that you could have Neder that's on the Gavra, and you could have a Shavua that's on the Cheftza, and you'll see also in Rosh Hashanah, the Gemara says that it's not as blanket as people make it. It's not true. But all your Abayim, I mean, everyone says it. It's like the general knowledge, because in general it's true. It's a general discernment, but it's not 100%. So we said another difference will be Drisus HaRegel, that when you walk, we said, but people don't care. We said our Mishnah is the opinion of Rabbi Eliezer, which we said is not something the Gemara likes to do. Rabbi Eliezer is of the opinion that even things that you'd let anyone else do, what's called vitul, something you easily forgo, even that, if someone took a vow, he will not have benefit from you. He's even prohibited from having that. Fine?